Yeah, let's do it. Let's make it happen.
Let's make it happen.
Let's talk. I just slammed a, or am in the process of slamming a rainstorm energy drink, so I'm ready for this shit.
Oh god, alright.
Sup? It's season fucking 3.
Welcome to another episode of Unconventional, where we sometimes take a step aside from uncommon legendary creatures, maybe talk about magic or hobby-adjacent things or pop culture stuff. This time around, we're still going to be talking about magic, but we're going to be talking about Innistrad, and who better to come on to talk about Innistrad with me other than Eliana. How's it going?
I am doing pretty well. Great to be back. It's been a minute.
It's been a hot minute, yeah.
It has been a country age, as they say. I'm not sure who says it, but I'm sure someone does. I'm waiting on the energy drink to kick in, but
it might take a while.
But we're here, and I'm ready to talk about Innistrad.
Yeah.
This was one of a few topics I pitched whenever we talked about me coming back on to do a show. Again.
Yeah, because compared to last time where we were like, let's talk about a commander you don't even play, and you're like, yeah, let's do it, and then we did, you were like, no, it was bad. I'm like, no, shut up, come back, please.
I like that episode despite the fact that, like, we didn't really talk significantly about the commander itself. Like, we did talk about, like, the philosophy of building in that style, and we also talked a lot about, like, burnout in content creation, which is something I'm again becoming increasingly all too familiar with. So serendipitous time thing.
Content creation right now is super crazy, and we'll get into Innistrad in a second here, folks, don't worry. But when it comes to, like, even me just doing a podcast casually with people is, like, you know, the simplest thing is I need to ask to see if people are available to come on, and I need to make time to do it, and the topics need to be somewhat semi-relevant to what's going on, you know, relatively right now. In which usually is the case, there's a lot of product, so it's very difficult to keep up with all the product. And, like, you know, the Wilds of Eldraine just came out, and that set's great, and I still don't know every card in that set.
I hope I never do.
Yeah, that just keeps surprising me. Play a card, and I'll be like, what does that do? Cool.
Yeah, and that's no knock against the set. I think the set is really cool. It was very popular at my local game store. We had sold out pre-releases every day of the week, and
awesome,
really full draft weekend. So the set's a big hit as far as I can tell, and I think people are just excited to get, like, a regular standard set again.
Yep. No craziness, no supplemental set after supplemental set. Only two commander decks this time around, which is great. Yeah. And then they also, this was the set they also sprinkled in the Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah. The SLX Universes Within.
Yeah. Which was another thing that I wanted to talk about with you, because I just thought it was so funny, because months ago, or even by the time that, like, some other Universes Within cards were being released, I was like, hey, you know, they put in the Stranger Things cards as Universes Within on Innistrad. They should definitely do the same as the Walking Dead ones. And everyone's like, well, I don't know. And I'm like, I think they definitely should, considering that, like, they're all survivalists. It has to do with zombies. Like, it's a no-brainer. And sure enough, it eventually went into it. And on one hand, I'm sure there are some people who are like, I can't believe they put two Universes Beyond products as Universes Within on Innistrad. And I'm like, I don't care. It's on Innistrad. That's enough for me.
It just makes sense, though. Like, especially this setting. It just makes sense. Also, I am... Okay, so one thing they... I don't know. I haven't seen anyone talking about it, but it feels slightly, like, controversial, I guess, is the fact that the Lucille, the equipment card that was in the Walking Dead thing, they reprinted it as Geese's favorite shovel, right?
Yeah. I was like, oh, that's great.
But for... Which, yeah, great stuff. But for... So, people have said for a long time, because the... Rick Steadfast Leader card is a very strong card.
Very, yeah.
People have, you know, said, oh, this feels like an Audric. People, like, it should just be an Audric card when they eventually print it. And it's already a legendary human soldier. And then, we got a whole new... Despite us getting a legendary equipment themed around Geese, an already existing character, for some reason, Greymond...
is just a guy,
a brand new guy that we've never seen on Instagram before. But he's a brand new guy.
Yeah. So Rick Steadfast Leader became Greymond Avison Stalwart. And if anyone doesn't know what the card does, or any versions of it, on ETB you get to choose two abilities from among First Strike, Vigilance, and Lifelink. And humans you control have each of the chosen abilities. And as long as you control four or more humans you control get +2/+2. Crazy, absolutely nutty. So easy to meet that condition. But why wasn't it Audric, though?
It should have been Big Dick Rick, and even though it wasn't, I had to get something in there. You know what? Last time we were talking about the Smodissi with Shouldred, I had to get something in there. I'm sorry. So it should have been Audric. And if they didn't want to do Audric because he has cursed blood.
He's a vampire now, yeah.
Yeah, he has cursed blood or whatever, you know, skill issue. Then they could have made it like Adeline or something.
Yeah, there's a lot of... One of the things that I always notice is that Magic is willing... Or the designers are willing to put in legendary creatures to flesh out a plane at different rarities, so it kind of feels like... There's more named characters in the world is more lived in. But in this case, when it comes to, like, you can take familiar cards and put familiar names and faces to them. I mean, like, what are they gonna do when, like, you take super iconic Megatron and Optimus Prime and, I don't know, put them on Kaladesh or Dominaria or whatever, and they're just some rando robots? Like, you know, there's opportunity... You know, there's opportunity to take existing characters, put them on these Secret Lair Universes Within cards, and have people be like, I am now much more interested in playing this version of the card.
Yeah, I think that would have been just a better idea overall, honestly. I think Audric or Adeline would have been a great choice, especially since they both just, all of their cards do human typeable stuff already anyway, and pump out humans and buff humans, and you know, it just makes sense. But it's, you know,
it is what it is.
It is what it is.
But yeah, like, that being said, despite any minor gripes with these types of things, I absolutely adore Innistrad as like a plane, a setting. I love a lot of the cards. I love the aesthetic. And as I've mentioned before, and I've said to a bunch of other people, I would absolutely love it as if there was a Dungeons and Dragons campaign on, like, in Innistrad that was kind of like Curse of Strahd light, or yeah. Like, you know?
The fact that we haven't gotten one yet is baffling to me, honestly, with how popular, especially some, like, obviously Crimson Vow and Midnight Hunt were what they were. A lot of people were disappointed with them mechanically, but I thought, you know, it was fun to return to the plane regardless, but a lot of those older Innistrad sets are so beloved, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just wild to me that we haven't gotten a setting for it. Like, I love the Ravnica and Theros ones and the Strixhaven. Like, the fact that we got a Strixhaven, like, don't get me wrong, love Strixhaven, but the fact that we got a Strixhaven source book before...
Yeah, but not Innistrad, yeah. Absolutely wild. Like, The neat thing that I could think of is that, like, you could have rules and mechanics so people can be vampires and werewolves.
Mm-hmm.
On, like, as well as just being bog standard humans. Because there was a PDF, there was the Planeshift PDF that was released, like, years ago. And mm-hmm. It had, like, oh, you could play different human variants depending on which city that you were based. You're like, oh, if you're out of Kesig, or you were out of Gavany, or you were out of whatever, you know? And cool, but, like, I want a little more mechanical stuff, you know, so we can goof around with that. But, and then what it really gets down to when I think of the plane, and I think about, like, you know, what would you want out of a storyline or gameplay or whatever, is that fundamentally it is a plane about human beings struggling against the creatures of the night in whatever form they happen to take. With, you know, a little bit of eldritch horror there, because we got frickin' Emrakul in the moon now. It's just, you know, it's ripe for the picking for, like, a super cool story, and we just haven't had it happen yet.
Yeah, there's definitely tons there. Like, even if we just go the classic gothic horror route, do, like, you mentioned Curse of Strahd, even if we just go the classic gothic horror route and do a la Strahd situation, like, you know, the Curse of Markov, like, it just writes itself.
Well, I think the PDF, or someone told me, I think Lenny Woolley told me that there was a brief mention that you could use Curse of Strahd as, like, a template, which, like,
yeah,
cool.
Maybe there's just like, whatever, that's good enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Strahd book. Though I imagine it would probably, like, sell like crazy if they did.
But they're just unwilling. They're cowards. They're unwilling to do it.
You hear me, Watsy?
You won't do it. Do it, though. But actually do it, please.
Please don't do it. Do it.
Yeah, don't do it. Please. No, I would hate. I would hate to see it. But yeah, like, So you within the last few, I think it's just only in the last few months, you changed your internet handle.
Yeah, I did.
You could probably tell me what the exact reason was, and maybe you have talked about it a little bit before somewhere else, or, like, I caught the end of Goblin Lore podcast the other day, because you were like, oh, hey, shout out to Cole. I'm like, yeah. But yeah, going from Defiant Necro to Defiant Cathar is quite, at least in color, like, magic color terms, a very black to white shift in direction.
Well, I wanted to get a little bit of both in there, you know, and it can be interpreted either way, but I do talk about more specific reasons why in that Goblin Lore podcast episode. You know, shout out Hobbs Q and the whole cast of hosts that are on Goblin Lore Pod. I definitely recommend y'all go listen to that episode. It involves me getting pretty raw and real about a couple of things. I'm talking about the story of Liliana Vess and what it means to me.
Mm-hmm.
And we also get into the association that I have with, you know, white mana, in addition to the obvious, like, black mana stuff I do, and the Cathars, which is the primary topic of discussion for today. But I do mention in that episode one of the things I like about them, and you know, Innistrad as a whole, is that, as you alluded to earlier, it's about the struggle of humanity against forces that they don't understand or can't understand, that are, you know, vastly more powerful and vastly outnumbered, like, you know, just like monolithic forces of darkness versus humanity, and humanity persevering in spite of the adversity.
Yeah, it, like, when you think about a human being, right, and, like, in our setting, all the stuff that humanity has done, for good and for bad, is in a way, incredibly impressive for what we're able to do with, like, our own pair of hands and our brain, you know? But when you do kind of shift back to the fictional setting of a very, like, you know, medieval European gothic setting where, you know, technology, you know, it kind of exists, you know, some scab makers, like, put up poles and, like, use electricity to, like, fuel their signs and stuff. And maybe there might be, like, a one or two bloodborne weapons somewhere in, like, the Cathars cache, because, like, they're like, we need, like, some crazy stuff to fight this. But, like, they gotta deal with spirits, werewolves, vampires, sea monsters, vampire bats, rando, like, elementals in the forest, worms, the one or two odd dragon that, like, exists somewhere.
Yeah, like, if it's a fucked up, like, monster, it's probably on Innistrad somewhere.
Yeah.
And then, you know, their own angels trying to kill him. Depending on which set we're in.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, and then again, once again, hey, just as a reminder, there is a giant eldritch noodle monster in the Silver Moon, so, like, that will always be a thing until Magic's like, oh wait, yeah, we gotta get her out of the moon now. And
Magic, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say Magic, in many ways, and, you know, it makes sense, because they're this huge, you know, storytelling, card selling conglomeration. You know, they're not gonna ice everything. They're gonna save stuff for later. It's just like the way, you know, superhero movies do it, where, you know, or comic book franchises do it, you know, where, like, no one ever really dies. They'll be back at some point because we want to make money off of them still. So
it's all about the big dollars.
Yeah, so once Imrakul or Nicol Bolas are needed, they'll show back up.
Oh my god, just freaking pull the trigger. My god, you need to innovate, you need to move on. But anyway, besides that.
Last episode when the whole Praetors for Change cast was on, we talked at length about what I think should happen to Nicol Bolas.
Oh, god, I love the Elspeth and Liliana, like, tag team of just annihilating him. It was like that. Idea was so stupid. Hey, everyone, go listen to that episode, because
it was really funny.
Oh my god, I still laugh about it. Freaking Spadussy, Jesus, what that mouth do. But yeah, like, bog standard human on Innistrad. Like, you're trying to farm, right? You're just trying to live your life, go to town, talk to the mayor, who may or may not be a werewolf. We don't know. And then, like, you know, your kid or your wife gets stolen or changed to a vampire or made a contract with a demon or reanimated a zombie in your basement. It's, you know, it's just a swath of issues. But then people are like, well, what if I pick up a sword and a shield and we grow up together and we say, fuck all that, and we kick all the monsters out. And they do that consistently.
Yeah. So, like, I think one thing that maybe people who are, like, maybe newer fans or who are not as familiar with beyond the cards, not familiar with, like, what the Cathars actually are. Cathars are, like, basically, like, divided into multiple, like, divisions, but are basically like the military force of the humans on Innistrad, for lack of a better term, to stand against the forces of the night, the vampires and demons and such. But they're divided into several different like sub organizations from there who have different like specialties within that organization. And that's touched on a lot in like Shadows of Innistrad and Eldritch Moon. They talk a lot about that, because when the like splintering of the Church of Avacyn happens and they the Order of St. Traff breaks off and does their thing, they kind of talk about the different like portions of the Cathars who join them or don't join them or who oppose them.
Yeah, because, like, if you're looking at it from, like, a very straightforward standpoint, like, most of them are, like, conscripted soldiers who, like, are part of, like, the forces. Then you get to, like, the weird, more specialized stuff where, like, very obviously there's, like, clerics, kind of, like, paladin equivalents, and, like, even weirder ones where you have, like, spirit, like, Thalia's Spirit Caller, I think, is a card that I think of off the top of my head that I absolutely love. Or is it Geist Caller?
Geist Caller.
Yeah, Geist Caller. Because, you know, we got a... They're not just ghosts. They're geists sometimes. and it's just... The organization, when you kind of flesh everything out, it's like, okay, yes, you have folks like Audric and Thalia who are... For the most part, until some supernatural elements came into play, were pretty bog-standard soldiers... who had some, like, martial prowess, first strike, a way to, like, in Audric's case, like, give keywords to everyone or make them basically more or less unblockable or arrange how combat works. And then Thalia's like, I'm going to tax you a little bit, or I'm going to tap your stuff down, you know? And then you get some more, like, the I'm going to exile stuff from your graveyard. I'm going to, you know, I there's some, like, some... Is there an archer? I think there's an archer or like two in there.
I believe there are card. I mean, I know there are. There is the Quiver of Kessig is like a that's not a card. That's just like a thing that exists.
Yes. Yeah.
That are like a group of archers who are Cathars. But let's talk about for a second about like the mechanics on Audric and Thalia's cards because they're so fitting of their roles within. The Cathars in general, like, because Audric was the Lunarch Marshal before, you know, he became Bloodcursed, chick of my damn head. He was the Lunarch Marshal, which is someone who, he's basically in charge of all the Cathars. He's like the, you know, chief executive officer of all of the military forces on Innistrad and has like a ceremonial seat on the Lunarch Council, but can't really like speak on matters as it relates to the general governance of the humans. But like because the Lunarch Council before the dissolution of the Church of Avacyn was like the governing body for most of the humans on Innistrad, and was led by Micaeus, who was the you know, head honcho of the Lunarch Council, the big bishop man, the Pope of Innistrad.
Basically the Pope, yeah.
Basically the Pope. He's the Lunarch. The Lunarch Council was that, and then Audric being like the chief of all of those military forces and being like the head honcho of the Cathars, basically, the fact that he gives your other creatures like abilities or can direct them to like attack or block in certain ways is like really flavorful of that, I think, because he's like he's a general, he's a leader,
and you know, having pseudo battalion trigger was also pretty great, although always wish it was like just give me the one less creature, don't make it three or more, because then that it was just so hard to work with when the first time I played with Audric as a commander. But there's always love for that card. I'll always love that card and that character forever. Just because, yeah, every version of, like, all right, we're going to attack as a group, and the group will have a payoff that it will be in our favor because of how we can direct combat. Or, hey, I'm going to train all of you with the keywords so we not only, like, round each other out, make ourselves collectively better as a whole. And so, like, you know, hey, I have Trample, I have Lifelink, I have... First Strike, and I have Death Touch. You're like, oh, I don't know where you came from, but that Death Touch guy, you get in there, let's go. And you attack as a group, and everyone's like, I don't know if I'm going to block this. And it's just a very cool, detailed thing that, like, once again, very fits his position. And especially, like, the type of character and hero that he is in the world as well. Of, like, you know, this is the guy you want on your side, and which is why... Later on, we get the what some people consider to be a very underwhelming version of the character and his magic card, good old Bloodrake, where he the way I look at it, and this maybe like I think I can understand it, is that like, okay, so they had to add red for the vampire thing. And then they're like, okay, they probably could have had room to give him a keyword, but it was probably getting too wordy for the text box, so they had to just get rid of it, which is fine, whatever. But the way I look at it is that, like, obviously, like, blood tokens can be used for discarding and drawing cards for you to find, like, more cards out of your deck for whatever you need. But the way I think of it is, like, he uses keywords, he uses, like, the knowledge that other people bring to the table to hack and slash and draw blood to gain reasons for himself. I just wish it was some way to empower him, but that's where my deck favors. Anyway, I'm just, more reasons for me to talk about Audric, but essentially he's not that bad of a card. I just wish, yeah, they maybe went a little bit differently about it.
So Audric. And then, I mean, then we have Thalia, right? So, like you said, she taxes your opponent's resources. Thalia's position, originally, before she broke off to found the Order of St. Traff, was the Guardian of Thraven, right? Which is a kind of a pseudo-ceremonial position in the Cathars that was originally held by a man named Lothar. So Thraven's like the capital, right, of the Church of Avacyn, and the Guardian of Thraven's like generally like a very like a pseudo ceremonial position of someone who's in charge of the military forces, specifically of Thraven, who's like their job is to direct the defense of Thraven, and generally it's like someone who's accomplished something heroic and like they're given that as like a badge of honor. It's like, oh, you're the Guardian of Thraven. And Lothar was killed in the Siege of Thraven, and then Thalia became his successor after that. So she's there guarding Thraven by taxing your opponent's resources, not actively going out and commanding troops the way that Audric is, but by, you know, standing there and, you know, being that bulwark of defense, but in like a way that kind of allows you to marshal your own forces in a specific way while dissuading opponents from trying to like assault your fortress, I guess. And then the Heretic Cathar is from when she, you know, discovered the corruption within the Lunar Council, the infiltration by the Skier Stag. And see, all this stuff I'm saying sounds like a foreign language. Just
keep throwing out the MTG Innistrad buzzwords, and either everyone knows exactly what you're talking about, or they have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
I mean, do I just need to like give like a
all right, everyone, here's everyone, there will be a link in the description. No, there won't. That will have all the terminology of Innistrad in it. But yeah.
It's actually like a cult, demon worshiping cult that after Micaeus was killed and Avacyn went insane, Jaren was kind of like Micaeus' unofficial replacement on the Lunar Council, and he was a demon worshiper, and they kind of infiltrated.
He's like, haha, Ormondal, and Ormondal's like, okay, you fool.
I'm gonna eat you. I am gonna eat you. But yeah, Thalia discovered that corruption, brought the information accused the Lunar Council, basically. Audric was kind of like, I can't really do anything about it, friend. Sorry.
Hands are tied. Oh, well.
Hands are tied. And Thalia was like, okay, well, screw you guys. And she ended up getting arrested at one point, and then Audric and her lieutenant actually like freed her, and she rode off with a bunch of other Cathars who joined her and formed the Order of St. Traft. So Thalia Heretic Cathar is kind of like, I think, representative of that, in that it's the card has a little bit better combat stats, and in addition to forcing your opponent's non-basic lands and creatures also come in tapped. So she's, you know, she's rooting out that corruption. She's forcing your opponent to play on the same playing field.
I love that version of Thalia so much. So much advantage. Someone's like, I'm gonna pop off and throw out all this stuff, and you're like, no, you will not. And they're like, oh no, my stuff enters tab. That's terrible. I'm like, yeah, that's a shame. That's, yeah.
It's been pointed out a few times by different people, but, like, I really love the fact that both of her cards are just, like, the effects are relatively simple and, like, surface glance don't seem that impactful, but then you're like, oh, all non-creature spells cost one more. Like, that stops so many unfair strategies.
Oh, wait, what if I wanted to cast a bunch of ramp spells? Okay, well, you gotta pick and choose. You can't just do them all. And they're like, oh, no, and you can't just willy-nilly throw out a bunch of mana rocks and fast mana to, like, get ahead when it's like, no, you gotta pay for those taxes. You're like, ah, oh, no, but I wanted to play unfair magic. You're like, no.
No, can't do it. And so, like, I think it's just kind of representative of that whole, like, you know, humanity standing in the face of the forces of darkness when, like, just one simple little, like, tiny little effect like that, it's just like you just got this lady with a sword standing there you know, stopping you from being unfair. It's just one human standing against the tide of fast mana.
The other thing too that I really like about like the original Ondrik and then the two versions of Thalia is that they have first strike. Yes. Which now, apparently, with the Council of Colors in, like, R&D, is like, well, we gotta be careful about the rarity and when they can get first strike because of, like, bad gameplay in Limited or whatever. But, like, first strike is very relevant in an offensive, but most definitely in a very defensive way, where you can get, like, a board of just first strike creatures, and they're like, I'm gonna attack you with the big thing, and you're like, I will have the group of them block, and it just dies, and we're all good to go. And then the opponent's like, wait, whoa, hold on a minute. Like, it's one of my, there's one Legacy deck that I know of that is focused around playing first strike creatures in, like, a mono white soldier stompy deck that is like, they're like, oh, I'm gonna attack you with Eldrazi, and they're like, cool, I'm gonna block it and survive combat, and oh, alright, I'll let that one go through, but I'll still have the board after this. And they're like, oh, first strike, right, very relevant.
Mm-hmm. First strike. Also, like, I feel, again, playing into that thing we talked about, like, you know, just the regular humans standing against all these crazy monsters just trying to survive. We might not get away unscathed, but we will survive.
Yeah, and the fact that, like, once again, we're swimming back in Ondrik, it's the fact that it's like Ondrik can take all those keywords, rally a group of people, and now also, I guess, Greymond as well can kind of do a very similar thing. In that it's all about working together as a single unified force that, you know, can move mountains and defeat, like, the most powerful enemies. And it just goes to show that, like, yeah, you know what? Like, Innistrad's had, like, 100 apocalypses within, like, a few years, you know? Uh-huh. Outside spaghetti monster comes out of nowhere and messes everything up. You know, Grizzlebrand showing up immediately, but then not being an issue, and then Avacyn going crazy, and Phyrexians invading, and all this other stuff, and they will work through it all, and they'll dust themselves off, and, you know, they'll mourn their losses, but then the next few years, they'll be good to go.
I made this joke when they first were doing the little side stories, for the different planes, and I know I'm not the only one that made this. I saw other people on Twitter making this joke too. You know, like, the Phyrexians show up on Innistrad. They're like, yeah, it's time to, you know, just destroy everything. And, like, you're all going to be completed and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, the day the Phyrexians left their plane to invade the rest of the multiverse was the most significant day in their history. For the Innistradi, it was Tuesday.
Yeah. They're like, this is pretty normal. We've done this before. Like, we did this last week.
Last week, we fought off, you know, a horde of undying zombies. How is this different?
Look, we had some crazy necromancer, like, raise up the graveyard, and, you know, like, you know, that was on us. We didn't, like, consecrate it. We didn't, like, we didn't do our part. All right, that's on us. But you know what? We took care of it, because that's what we do.
I do love the fact that the period of time after Avacyn went mad, and the influence of the Eldrazi was kind of corrupting a lot of the everything on Innistrad. It's called the Travails, right? Those who survived it refer to it as the Travails.
I am surprisingly not super in-depth on the lore of Innistrad. I got very broad strokes knowledge of, like... Yeah, I know of, like, XYZ thing, you know?
Unfortunately, extremely well-versed. as your listeners may be able to tell from the few tirades I've already gone on. Did you read the Crimson Vow and Midnight Hunt stories?
I think Oh, I definitely went, yeah, I did read the one with Audric and Thalia, like, with the Hero's Downfall artwork and Henrika and all that, yeah.
Yeah, that scene, I love that scene, where, you know, Audric has, you know, he's been, just defeated and kind of, like,
Well, he's given up, essentially. Like his...
Yeah, he's given up. He's really everything he believed in, the Church of Avacyn, the Lunark Council, has been proven to be false. Like, you know, Avacyn fell from grace and was killed eventually, and, like, you know, different people obviously react, because, I mean, it was literally a religion on Innistrad. Avacyn was worshipped as a god. And so these people who have been fighting their entire lives against this darkness all around them, their one source of light has just, you know, turned against them. And so a lot of people did not take that well, obviously. Some people, like we talked about earlier, Thalia formed the Order of St. Traft to continue to fight against the darkness, because the Lunar Council couldn't be trusted anymore. The Church of Avacyn couldn't be trusted anymore. But Audric assisted her in escaping their quote-unquote judgment, but also he was just kind of broken after that. Like, he was like, okay, this... I aided and abetted these people, and, like, literally everything I devoted my life to is, like, pointless now. So he was just, like, inconsolable, and didn't really assist with that final battle of Thraben, and, like, was just kind of, like, done. And then Henrika Domnathy is one of the lesser families of vampires, are the Domnathy. They are demon worshippers, though. Much like the Skyrsdag, whom we already talked about briefly. But, so basically, they're trying to recruit Cathars and former Cathars into their Ormondal worshipping army, to, like, bolster their ranks. And she has her sights, Henrika has her sights set on Audric and Thalia, because they are, in her words, the two greatest Cathars who've ever lived. So, you know, she attacks Audric and tries to coerce him into accepting Ormondal's profane blessing or whatever. Thalia shows up and tries to help him deal with the whole situation. And then there's this great scene where, like, they have both of them kind of... captive, and Henrika is, like, trying to basically use a child to coerce them into giving in to Ormondal, and she's like, hold on, Audric, I'll get to you in a minute, and she's just like, because we will have you, but, you know, in our own time, and she's, like, talking to Thalia, and she's like, will you serve? And, like, they, like, lock eyes for a minute, and, like, they kind of play it up like Thalia's about to, like, give in,
yeah.
Saying, and then she says the whole fucking, like, the Cathar motto.
The oath, yeah.
I serve the soft light of the moon that holds back the terrors of the night, and then they just start kicking ass. And, Audric gets turned into a vampire at the end of it, though, because Henrik is like, oh, you know, I'm... You guys might have beat me, but I'm gonna take something with me. And she turns him into a vampire, but he is able to maintain his humanity. That they, like, talk to it about at the end of the little story. They're like, yeah, they basically, like, confirm that despite now being a vampire, Audric is able to maintain his, like, human soul.
Yeah, which was such a cool thing. Like, it's the fact that, like, at his lowest point, like, the last thing that could definitely, like, would ruin him fundamentally would be to lose his humanity and become, you know, whether that means, like, he became an undead or, like, something like that, like, it would ruin him. And yet, despite what happened to him, that something maybe fundamentally about him or his character or, like, something about him, like, survived that conversion, and I just loved, like, the imagery. I love the artwork that they used for both the regular card and also his, like, vampire frame version, is that there's the obvious ferocity when the blood is swirling around him and his sword is still gleaming. Like, his Avacynian blade is still glowing blue.
Avacyn being dead at this point.
Yeah, you know, like...
A thing they drew, like... They brought attention to it. They were like, oh, wow, how's it still, like... How's that stuff still, you know, the faith of what she stood for, I guess, is what's still powering things.
Yeah. Kind of. And then with the regular artwork, there, he is standing there with this incredibly intense look, but you can see his body is still has, like, there's almost, like, this sort of serenity to it. Where it's just like he is still that guy, you know, like he's still gonna come here to kick your ass. And then just the depiction, like the imagery that they had of him leaping through the air to like get back into the fight. It was just another reason for me, like, reading that story and seeing him look up at the moon at the end of it and still say, like, you know, that he's still himself and he's still going to continue the fight. Like, gave me more reason to be like, well, now I feel a little more justified in making my own Ondric deck, and justify continue playing it with all this, like, these super fun, crazy cards. Cause, you know, despite the fact that he has a fundamentally odd ability, cause they wanted to use blood tokens in some way in that set. And, you know, hey, I'll give arterial alchemy into that deck so he can have blood swords. That sounds metal as fuck and sounds like maybe something he could do. But it's just, yeah, it goes to show that, like, you know, like, and then we go a step further where Sigarda being the last, at the time, the last sister to survive, and so people flock around her now as sort of the figurehead. Yeah. And then, shoot, what's her name? Why am I suddenly forgetting it? The sister that came back.
Lyessa.
Like, the fact that Lyessa, yes, despite the fact that, you know, even she was consorting with demons, and that the fact that she was fused with one basically fundamentally allowed her to come back, is another thing that goes to show that it's like, she is still on the side of humanity. You know, the fact that, like... Sure, there's probably a few other angels still kicking around, but really the big guns right now is Lyessa and Sigarda, and so humanity still has hope top of that.
Flocked around, or it's the Church of Sigarda now. It's not the Church of Avacyn anymore. They're fully on that. They're sipping that heron juice now.
And like, also just to kind of show, like, Sigarda's. Each version of Sigarda has been really interesting. Obviously, the first one's really powerful. The second one is maybe considered a little bit of a major step down. But Sigarda, Fawn of Blessings, is such a step up, and also just goes to show, like, how it all works together now. That it's like, yeah, you know, Avacyn may be gone, and a lot of catastrophes might have happened to us within the last, I don't know, 6 months or whatever. But... We still band together as one and can work together. And God, Font of Blessings. Every time I'm like, I'm gonna kill the thing. You gotta kill her first. Dang it! All right, fine. It's, you know, it works.
It's so. I think because it was kind of like the angels on Innistrad, like, you know, support the humans and give them something to believe in. But I think, like, symbologic.
Symbolically?
Symbolically, there we go. That's what I was trying to say. I knew there was a word for it. Symbolically, I think going back to the thing about, like, oh, Avacyn's sword still glows for Audric when he uses it, or whenever Thalia is able to wield the Moonsilver Spear. And it still, you know, it glows with holy power, even though Avacyn's no longer there. I think it's a testament to, like, what I really feel, in spite of all the gothic horror stuff that Innistrad is famous for, is just kind of a testament to the Cathars and to, like, Innistrad being about the struggle of humanity and about there always being hope, because Avacyn was the angel of hope, right? And I feel like the faith they have in what has transferred to not be faith in Avacyn, but faith in humanity and their will to survive and to protect others is what enables those holy weapons to still be powered. Like, kind of like the D&D 5e thing about how, like, paladins can have faith in an ideal in their power rather than a specific god. So I feel like that's kind of the direction they're moving in. At least I hope it is, because that's my interpretation of it, and I think that's really cool. Like, obviously, Sigarda has taken up Avacyn's role of the protector of humanity on Innistrad, but I think, to your point about Font of Blessings, like, it's kind of like the fact that she supports both the angel-type cards and the human-type cards, I feel like it's more of, like, a partnership. She's not as aloof and, like, away from the humans as Avacyn was. She's, like, she's there with them.
You know? Yeah. And, like, the other thing, too, is that, like, when you think about Innistrad's history, is that, like, you know, she took down Lyessa herself, and, like, that was a thing that kind of stung with everyone, to show that, like, you know, she had the potential to do that, and that her, basically, her programming, the core fundamentals of what she is as, like, an angel, made her do that. But then also being sealed up for God knows how, what, 100 years? Several hundred years? I can't remember the time frame.
A long time.
Very long time, you know? Same thing that Nahiri, you know, Nahiri and her were in there together and having a great time in there. And then they came out and decided to do women's wrongs in every conceivable way. The way I look at it, when I look at, like, when I think about the fact that, like, Nahiri and Avacyn, it's sort of like these not necessarily like contrasting characters, but characters who ended up going through very similar experiences, also affected by the same person, Sorin, is that they both start out as mono white and, you know, positive forces of good in one way, shape, or whatever, right? And then they both get sealed in the Hell Vault, and not long after they are let go out of the Hell Vault, they go through fundamental changes that make them more red and do bad things. And it's just I just find it interesting that two originally white characters become white red and do bad things, even though in some twisted way, shape, or form they think that it's a good thing to do, like,
yeah,
or, you know, vengeance,
right? It's about what they think is right, and about, yeah, like you said, vengeance, which is why, you know, Avacyn didn't get black in her color identity, because black is, like, a very self-centered color in terms of, like, not necessarily in being selfish, but in terms of self-interest and self-preservation, whereas everything Avacyn did, she saw as she was, even though it wasn't for the good of the plane, she saw it as doing it for the good of her home and of Innistrad and of the survival of the plane as a whole, because of what had been done to her mind. So which is where the red in her identity comes from. Like, yeah, she's, like, doing all this really messed up stuff that seems evil, but to her, it's still, like...
It is ultimately, it's out of passion, it's out of madness. Like, that's the one thing that I think it's very easy to kind of get it all misconstrued, is that, like, by giving her red, red is often used as the color of madness. And madness was, of course, a big thing during Shadows Over Innistrad Block. And it's like, you know, you can't even begin to think about what some of these people have gone through to get to that point. Like, having an eldritch entity affect you just by being near you in proximity, being sealed up for an undisclosed amount of time that, like, you know, we don't know how they interpreted that time while they were stuck in the Hell Vault for. And even as being, even if, even being an angel and not fundamentally like a human with like a different set of limitations and mental fortitude, it's like, you know, the entire concept of who she is as a, like a person and as a guardian and as a figurehead, like, gets thrown for a loop when, you know, mental thought gets thrown out the window and like common sense, like, just doesn't exist because you're going crazy. You're going insane.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And then, you know, I think the community kind of like partnership aspect that Sigarda embodies in terms of like being more a part of the humans instead of aloof and away from them is fits in with her, like, you know, green white identity for sure. Like,
yeah,
in terms of she's a more active member of these humans' lives instead of just being this like aloof god that they pray to. She's just like, she's there among them. And yeah, like,
it's very interesting how the sort of faith dynamics have changed in the plane. Because when you look at stuff like Theros, where the gods, because of people's belief in the gods, they have, they exist and have power. And if humanity shifted away from that or stopped thinking about them completely, they would cease to exist. And it's the fact that on Innistrad, that over the course of its history and with all the stuff that's happened to it and the, like, the loss of the figurehead, like, not just a figurehead, several figureheads, like, everything about it, the foundations have been shook and crumbled, and yet they're still able to rebuild, and Sigarda is able to come into her new position as well as she has, and that who knows what'll happen with Lyessa in the future, but, you know, at least Sigarda's no longer alone like she initially thought after losing Avacyn and Gisela and Bruna. Which,
yeah, and there's, which, yeah, God, the big climactic battle at the end of Eldritch Moon, where Brisella showed up. Have you perchance read that story?
Oh, it's been a while since I have, but I do like, if anything, I do remember like the artwork, because I didn't Thalia and Sigarda like tag team that fight.
Basically, so what happened was, this was when Thalia was lead. Okay, so this more so plays into what I was talking about earlier about the humans standing against darkness and like their own faith being in themselves rather than anything else is what kind of keeps them going. Because at the beginning of the story, they're kind of talking about like Thalia and like her, you know, lieutenants are like leading the force of Cathars that, you know, remain human and remain, you know, uncorrupted by the Eldrazi madness, and they're kind of marching across the plains, like trying to get back to Thraben to basically siege the city and like try and drive out the corruption that's there. And Rim Karalus, who had been one of the Slayers, shows up and meets up with them. He's like a Griff Rider who had been an Inquisitor, I believe, and he became known as like an Angel Slayer from like basically just taking out like the corrupted like Eldrazi mad angels that were like attacking human settlements, mm-hmm. by riding his Griff up there and just like 1v1ing them. So he brings Avacyn's spear to Thalia, and, you know, confirms that someone has killed Avacyn, and, which, you know, we all know was Sorin. Sorin killed Avacyn.
Anguish unmaking. Oh, I'm so sad.
That is the day the last of Sorin Markov's mirth left him. That is when he became Sorin the Mirthless.
That's when he became Sorin with the tall glass of wine.
Yeah.
Blood wine.
He got sexier, but he got sadder. Is there a correlation?
Perhaps. Maybe. Who knows?
Judge. But I digress. So, Thalia at this point has been kind of, for lack of a better term, been possessed by the Geist of St. Traft, who was at one point, like, a hero on Innistrad, similar to the position that Thalia occupies now. And over the generations, St. Traft has selected people to be his heir over time, who are like just supposed to be like generally, you know, badass humans who help lead other humans through times of you know, crisis. And Thalia is the heir to St. Traft in this generation of humans. And whenever she tries to pick up the Moonsilver Spear, you know, Rem is like, oh, I wouldn't do that. And it, like, shocks her when she tries to grab it because, like, the holy power is too much or whatever. But St. Traft enables her to pick it up. And they ride to Thraben, and she makes this speech when they go about, you know, how in spite of all of it, you know, she holds it up and she basically tells the whole, you know, force that's riding with her, you know, Avacyn's dead. And everyone, you know, mixed reactions to that. Everyone's, like, freaking out and sad. And they're like, but, like, Avacyn's not here anymore, but we are. And we have to keep going. We have to keep fighting. We have to save our homes because, like, we're still here. And there are still people we care about here. So regardless of the fact that Avacyn's gone, what she stood for is still something we can believe in and fight for. So they go to Thraben, and she wields the Moonsilver Spear in battle against the Eldrazi, and then Brisella shows up, jacks her shit right up, and
yeah, they're like, you are not her, and she's like, damn, you're right. And then Sigarda shows up, and it's like,
Sigarda shows up, Sigarda fights Brisella for a minute, and then she is, it looks like she's about to get defeated, and then St. Traft and, like, basically becomes Thalia's stand, and she gets, like, spectral angel wings and wields Avacyn's spear. And,
why didn't, like, we get that version of Thalia? That'd be so rad.
That card. It's so cool. It was such a cool moment.
I'm like, I'd be totally okay if she was blue-white, because, you know, you gotta have the St. Traft, like, aura thing. But yeah, just, like, everything about it. Like, it's taking the idea of taking the Moonsilver Spear, which is, like, not really that great of an equipment, you know?
No,
and then throwing on the aura or St. Traft or whatever you want to do, like, you know, summon angels on attacks or just whatever. And then, or give hexproof, maybe. I don't know. You know, we could do hexproof.
Make her indestructible.
Or something, yeah. Because, like, just the whole concept, like, the one thing that really made me love Innistrad was when they're like, how do we protect ourselves from Emrakul's influence? And then the spirits were like, let's bond with humans and work together.
Let's jump in there.
Yeah, and then everyone gets a stand. You get a stand and you get a stand. And everyone JoJo poses and yeah, fights off, like, madness and all that other stuff, which was so cool. And it's just, you know, and once again, it goes to show the absolute resiliency of the plane and the fact that a plane can have a lot of its, like, conceptions be questioned or flipped on its head when it's like, well, it's just humanity against everything else. And it's like, but what if humans and spirits and werewolves and angels were against everything else? And maybe throw, like, sprinkle in a vampire here or there, you know?
I think that kind of speaks to the fact that you don't have to be human to have humanity, I guess, in terms of these kinds of stories. Like, humanity is, like, this kind of, like, thematic, like, just, I guess in this instance it represents, like, just being decent and caring about the people around you and, like, standing for something is kind of what, I guess, in terms of Innistrad, humanity tends to mean, because there are so many non-human things that help defend humanity.
Yeah, and obviously it's not something that's just exclusive to Innistrad, but when we think about what Innistrad, once again, gone through, like, every other week, almost, they, you know, even, you know, I'm sure even Geesa and Geralf, that's the one I've never...
That dude, you know.
You know, the siblings, you know, even they're like, oh man, we gotta work together to freaking survive this, you know. like that just goes to show how absolutely, one, there's a lot of fun that can be had on that plane, and there's a lot of crazy stuff that can happen, and who knows what they'll do when we finally get back to it. But for what we've got, and even from the universes within, like, it's made total sense. Innistrad's great, and I encourage anyone to take a look at, like, the cards, even, just fundamentally from throughout Magic's history. Like, there's a lot of cool, fun stuff you could be playing with. Like, Skirstak High Priests, or whatever.
There's a, like, I don't know, like, in Innistrad, the original Innistrad sets were, like, some of the most fun sets and formative sets for Magic as it is now, I think. Because we got cards like, you know, like, in Dark Ascension, we got, like, Mackayzy Unhallowed and Thalia, Guardian of Thraben. And then, like, Innistrad itself, we got, like, Liliana of the Veil, who's not very good anymore, but, like, at the time was kind of, like, format-defining.
And is now, like, a $10 card.
Yeah. And it's mostly because of nostalgia, because I don't think she's really good anywhere, honestly, other than maybe Standard. Maybe? I don't know.
Power creep has been a thing. Power creep has been a very major thing the last few years.
One of the best planeswalkers ever printed is kind of unplayable now. It's wild.
Sad day. It's a sad day.
Sad day. But you know what is still very playable from those OG Innistrad sets? Thalia, Guardian of Thraben. She's enduring. She's still around.
They're like, we'll bring her back again for Standard. And everyone's like, wait, what? And I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah, why not?
She still does work.
She does the work. And she'll always do the work. She'll fight the good fight, you know? It's great.
That's what it's all about. Tally-ho, Cathars. We're serving that soft moonlight that holds back Terra's in the night, you know?
I mean, also, what other way to end the episode by having you tell us about your super cool, awesome t-shirt?
Oh yeah, that's what a great segue. We totally planned this. So on my bonfire, which we will include a link to, I'm sure. I have a new t-shirt. Really, really cool design. Art by CD, a really talented artist on Twitter who does some like kind of anime inspired art of Magic the Gathering characters and has done some really cool proxies. Then the design itself was put together by Vote Checkbox, Evelyn on Twitter, who's also a member of the Praetors for Change team along with myself. And you know, just the collaboration of the three of us made this awesome design. It is a picture of Thalia holding a sword, looking defiant. It says so at the bottom. It says defiant. It has a Roman numeral 2-1 on the side. It says "Tally Ho Cathars," which is from an infamous shit post I made that kind of became a whole brand.
It's funny how quickly brands can change for yourself within like a year.
Wild.
It's like necromancy and dark magic, blah blah. Tally Ho Cathars. Let's go.
Yeah. And then on the side, it says in Japanese, I serve the soft light of the moon that holds back the terrors of the night, which is the motto of the Cathars. There's another, stanza to it as well that I never remember. That's, the main part of it. No, it's going to bug me if I remember. It's, hold on, let me look it up.
It's clearly a full thing, because I definitely don't know it.
Yeah, the whole thing is much longer, and I serve the soft light of the moon that holds back the terrors of the night. I serve the bonds between us, driving out the fear that would break us apart. Is the flavor text that is on one of the secret lair versions of Thalia, but the whole thing,
the one of 11 versions of her.
Yeah, the whole motto is it comes originally from one of the Innistrad story pieces, and it's a quote from Thalia that is in the story bit from one of the OG Innistrad's sets. I think it's from Shadows of Innistrad. But it's the Lunar Inquisition is the story name. And it says, the entire thing is, I serve the soft light of the moon that holds back the terrors of the night. I serve the bonds between us, driving out the fear that would break us apart. I serve the holiness we all aspire to.
Which is fire.
Yeah, absolutely. That first sentence is the most oft uttered one, though.
Yeah, it's iconic. It's like it's we're like in an incredibly hilarious, weird position when it comes to like modern like pop culture stuff, because Castlevania is getting like its new season in the future. Which I'm very excited for. And a lot of people compare Shadows Over Innistrad to Bloodborne, from like a presentation game theme standpoint. And there's just a lot of appeal to the plane for like a lot of reasons. Like, if you like vampires and werewolves, there's obviously an appeal for you. If you like gothic horror, there's an appeal for you. If you like humanity struggling against the forces of evil, you know, you got a common goal there. So there's just a lot of things about Innistrad, and with a lot of like adjacent media stuff that's like around it, that like there's just a lot of stuff that you can do with this type of like genre. Mm-hmm. And especially when you have characters and you have like phrases and oaths and stuff like that, it's like it's very easy to get really involved with it and then also make a complete shift in your online identity and be like, huh, you know, I have this defiant necro shirt, and now we're just gonna get rid of that and do this new thing.
Yeah, well, you know, there, it's, I don't want to get into the, I mean, maybe I do want to get, I don't know. Do you want me to talk about the whole thing?
Yeah, do the whole thing. Do the whole thing.
Okay, sure. So it is a dual kind of, well, not even dual, it's like quadruple reasons, honestly. Part of the reason is, you know, a while back I changed my actual name that I go by, you know, in real life and online, from Liliana, mm-hmm. same as the character, to Eliana. And that's because I talked about this in the Goblin Lore podcast episode, I did not want to be tied exclusively to that character. I am my own person, and while I love that character and have a lot of strong feelings about her story and relate to her in some aspects of my life, I am my own person, and I wanted to have my own identity. And part of that is, you know, not making my entire brand synonymous with her, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who's, you know, played me in Magic before knows I play a lot of mono black and I play a lot of mono white, and that's basically what I do. And
you should play some red, but that's just me.
Some of my you know, some friends of mine know I'm a huge Vorthos, which anyone listening to this episode will probably come to understand as well. Some of my favorite characters in Magic are Liliana, Elspeth, and Valia, for a lot of the reasons we've already talked about, in so much as least Valia, for that whole just like aspect of being like a regular person standing against so much, right? And that struggle against that adversity is pretty inspiring. And I think that what the Cathars in general stand for, and you know, Valia in particular, but the Cathars more broadly, is really cool and inspiring to me. So that's why I wanted to adopt that into my online persona, to kind of indulge in both aspects of the way I like to play Magic, and kind of get a little bit of that in there. So I've got the Defiant from Defiant Necro, and the Cathar to pay homage to that. And yeah, that's the short version, I guess. That's the nitty gritty of it. But I think, additionally, more shallowly, can I also just say that anyone who is familiar with like my taste in music, for example, like one of my favorite artists is Lingua Ignota, who's this kind of harsh noise artist that blends like harsh noise with like classical, like piano and gospel music.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, Catholicism, obviously, a lot of shitty people involved in that religion, but Wow, they nailed it with the aesthetic. Let me tell you.
If there's one thing they did right.
Yeah, that aesthetic whips ass. Religious iconography has long been a part of my brand, sometimes for irony or, you know, blasphemous, some would say, means, but I think the way that it seems that characters like Thalia and Audric and the Cathars are moving towards just a general faith in humanity and a general, like, we still have the trappings of this religion, though our God no longer exists, and we know that fact, and we still invoke these trappings of religion, but it's in honor of, like, humanity as a whole, is, again, just inspiring and cool to me, and I really dig that.
Yeah, in a modern day of cynicism where it's very, like, I am someone who is very iffy about religion in general. My parents weren't raised, their parents were kind of sort of raised, and then their parents were, like, Protestant and Catholic and all that other stuff. So, you know, we're a few generations step away from that. But, you know, for a lot of people, you know, it's there for a reason, and, you know, who knows what happens in the next step of life, but in terms of right now, you know, some peace, getting some peace is nice. And also, yes, sometimes the aesthetics whip ass. You know, it's like, you know, there's a lot of thing, there's religion is complicated, and there's different kinds of religion and all that other stuff, but there's some cool things about it that I think people do like incorporating into their lives.
Yeah, I mean, I said this on Twitter in response to somebody, because I think someone was joking about a Bible secret lair or some crap like that.
Oh my god, no!
Nathan, Hermit Druid, commented on it and was like, don't threaten Elle and I with a good time, and tagged me in it. And I was like, yeah, we're probably the most religious, not religious people you'll ever meet. Because neither of us is super religious, but, like, just that whole, I don't know, it's just, I think the principles and the trappings and the aesthetic is what I enjoy, like, beyond the fact that the religion itself tends to not be very good.
To be perhaps harmful in some way. Yeah.
Harmful in many ways. It's like if people could extract the good things about it and leave behind the bigotry that it encourages, it's we're getting into a whole other subject now.
Yep. And perhaps maybe for a different time, and maybe not a podcast episode.
Actually, one of the other things I submitted was one of the other topics I pitched to you was an uncommon legend and religion as the subtopic. So maybe that's another episode.
Maybe that is another episode. We'll have to wait and see when time will be. Well, I mean, I'll just sign up again. Who cares? I've had Quinn on and Fitz on, like, almost back to back to back, it feels like. So, you know, you want to come back? Go for it. Let's sign up. We'll do it again.
Let's do it sometime soon. Probably after Sealed in Vegas. But...
yes. And, you know, maybe a little bit after that, too, just so you got some time to recover from that.
Mm-hmm.
Magic events are happening. Things are happening in Commander. It's kind of wild. It's kind of crazy right now.
Things do be happening.
But yeah, I think that's a good place to leave it for now.
I think so,
yeah. And then we can pick it up next time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. Ed, where can people find you?
I am basically everywhere on the internet at Defiant Cathar. You can still find me some places as Defiant Necro, but it links to Defiant Cathar. So, I primarily use Twitter, but I'm trying to migrate off of it to a different social media platform. I haven't really decided where I'm landing yet, but for right now, Twitter is the best place to find me. You can also find me through the Praetors for Change social media and through, running some streams for PlayDH Discord.
Hey, awesome. I don't know when this episode's coming out, probably in a couple weeks or so. Is that happening tonight?
Yeah, there's a PlayDH stream happening tonight in a little over an hour.
All right, awesome. Well, all the links for all that stuff will be in the description as usual, so go please check that out and touch base with Elle. It's always a great time, especially when we make shit posts about Audric and Thalia and getting blood curses and saying it's a skill issue.
I'm gonna repost that issue.
Yeah, I did earlier. I did earlier with a couple things.
I'm gonna go retweet it.
Oh, it's I just love doing it. It's so fun.
It's one of my better shit posts for sure.
And, so it's always a good time. It's always a good time on Hellsite Twitter. And yeah, everyone, thank you. Oh, wait, what was that? One last thing.
I just saw the other post. Okay, go ahead.
No. That is it for this episode. So everyone, thank you for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.